there, so she will let you know when your time is coming to a close for your question. The microphones will be cut off if you extend beyond your time limit. We ask that members of the audience remain respectful so that everyone can hear the questions and the responses. Should a member of the audience become disruptive to the event, they will be asked to leave so that the audience members can enjoy the rest of the evening. And no campaign banners, signs, literature, or campaign paraphernalia will be allowed in the forum hall. All candidate messaging will be kept to the lobby. Welcome everyone to the Salmon Chamber of Commerce All Candidates Forum. My name is Shelley Desitel, and I am the Interim Executive Director for the Chamber of Commerce, and I will be your moderator for this evening. Before we start this event, the Chamber acknowledges that we host this important event on the traditional territory of the Shipibo people. We extend our appreciation to learn, work, and live on their traditional lands. The Chamber is a membership-driven organization that works on behalf of our members and represents the collective voice of our business community. We have a volunteer board of directors, and I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize those individuals that are here this evening. We have Fiona Harris, the past president, who is our timekeeper this evening, Adam Nichol, Nathan Greaves, and Richard McBride, who are our lovely ushers this evening. Questions were collected from the community in advance and will be presented during the question-answer period. So we'll have a quick run through of the agenda, which will be displayed on screen. There we go. So first we're going to introduce the candidates for council. They're going to go in alphabetical order and have opening remarks. This will be followed by question and answer period, closing remarks, after which we'll have a 10-minute break and set up for the mayoral candidates this evening. We'll then introduce those candidates, followed by opening statements, a question and answer period, and closing remarks for them. Following the event, you will have an opportunity to speak with candidates in the lobby. If they are out there, they can do a meet and greet with all of you. So we are going to introduce the candidates for City Council joining us this evening. We are going to begin with Daniel Bardi. And I just want to note, too, that the candidates have 3 minutes for their opening remarks.
Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Daniel Bardi, and today I'd like to speak something about motivation and why I decided to run for Councilor of City of Salmonara. I was born in socialist country, Czechoslovakia, and I went through the Velvet Revolution back in 1989. I know there was narrative from one side, from another side. Since then, from my nature, I feel so much for injustice in this world, what's going on and what's happened there and on these days as well. Back in November 2021, current City Council brought a vaccine mandate for the city employees, same as the CCRD board. So we lost 47 firefighters in CCRD, some firefighters for the city, and some employees as well. I feel so with the, all those people which lost their job and income for the family. And that was a big red flag for me. Oh, what's going on in this beautiful country, which I just landed 7 years ago? I was so surprised what's going on. So I started the petition after Christmas, and I collected over 600 signatures against that vaccine mandate. People talk to me, oh, I'm vaccinated, but I'm against the mandate. Should be everything about the choice. And the choice is most important about every free society. So I collected over 600 signatures, and I sent the delegation record form to the city, and I was refused to speak on the city council about another side of the mandatory vaccination, which is not maybe about the health, it's about the choice and obedience. I was refused. I was refused by current leaders of the city to speak on front representatives on this town to say different opinion about these things which one divided us for last 2-3 years. I believe city representatives like councilors and mayor should in the hard time bring communities together. So we can survive hard times, whatever happened worldwide, because we are living in the hard times. On another side, we can see there's also lots of brightness because we can see deepest, we can see clearest what is the good, what is bad. I believe through hard work, I don't have experience with the municipal public affairs, but I was always interested for public, for political affairs. And I promise you hard work for all people. And Daniel Bardia, I'm running for the Council of City of Homeland. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now have Debbie Cannon. There she is.
Hello, my name is Debbie Cannon, and in 2005, I was newly elected my first year on council. Just over 16,000 residents and a budget of 20 million plus. I was on council from 2005 to 2014. I was re-elected 2018, fast forward 17 years. May 2021, the population recorded in the census increased by 9.6%, or just 1,726 people, so a population of just over 19,000. Seminar's jump of 9.7% is higher than BC's overall growth of 7.6%. And Seminar's budget is just over $40 million now. It is an exciting time in Seminar. We have just been discovered with this large, and we have lots of large capital infrastructure projects that we need to do. The wastewater treatment plant, a new pool, replacement of the Ross Street, or replacement of aging pipes in the ground. The Ross Street underpass will be complete in the spring of 2023. A new 10-year strategic plan has just been completed. We also need to do an update on our OCP, our official community plan. Also with this growth, we have a homeless population that has also increased. There is no easy fix with this, and it has been the question that has been asked all throughout the election. We have a very committed social issues committee that has worked hard and tireless with BC Housing to address this issue, so I think that we are working on it. I bring experience to the table, and I look for your support tomorrow at the advanced polls or October 15th at the election. And I would also like to add that our current council totally stood behind our policies during the pandemic, and I totally supported our decisions 100%. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll now have Brian Fletcher.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Brian Fletcher. I've decided to run for council this year. I'm a homeowner. I live in Staten Island with my wife and my wife, Myla, and my three children, Ty, Victor, and Sloan. I first came to Staten Island in 2006. Before I came here, and since then, I've moved around a few places, lived in Australia, back to Alberta, lived in Kelowna while I was going to college, and I decided to come back. I really like Staten Island. I'm choosing to raise my family here. One thing I did see from the COVID pandemic was some poor leadership decisions, in my opinion, from the federal, provincial, and then looking into it from the local government. We have a Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom, and it's not something that should be taken lightly. The rights and freedoms granted in it for itself as a document, what it guarantees, what it stands for. A lot of those things seem to have been thrown to the wayside. You know, of it's in the name of the greater good, but, you know, when... What's the point if the means totally don't justify the end? Like, so I started viewing recent council minutes because I figured with local government is something that I could have an effect on, is something that's achievable for me to win. I came across the non-gendered washing designation. And now this has been passed unanimously by current council, current leadership, and it just so happened to be at the same time that I'm teaching my daughter to use the washroom independently. And now I looked at the legislation and I read it multiple times, the definition, and so I'm not sure. I'm supposed to just sit back and watch a fully intact male follow my four-year-old daughter into a washroom and be okay with it? What's next? Like, where is this going? Where's the common sense? That being said, current leadership has put Salmon Arm in a relatively good place financially. They have made some good decisions. I'm here to provide a seemingly unrepresented conservative vote locally. You know, for legislation to be passed like that unanimously, and from the people I know in town, that is not at all the views of the people, and I'm here to provide a voice that is currently unrepresented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And just a quick note, could the candidates please hold the mic closer to their mouth? We are having a broadcast by the Voice of the Shoe Swap, so we want to be able to pick up everything that you do say this evening. Next up, we will have Kevin Flynn.
Thank you. As mentioned, my name is Kevin Flynn. I moved to the Shoe Swap in 1996. I got involved in the Chamber of Commerce very early.
Okay, Kevin Flynn. There we go. Moved here in 1996, so I'm a relative newcomer in the shoe shop, 26 years. Got involved in the Chamber of Commerce in the first couple years I was here, and then got involved in council in 2002. I run a financial planning and employee benefit business, and that business I work with my wife, who is here, Kathy, and my son, Chris, has started taking over that business. So I'm involved in the business community, I'm involved with employers, I'm involved with their employees selling employee benefit plans. I got involved because I wanted to make a difference in Salmon Arm, and as I said, started with the chamber and then got elected to council. 5 terms, hoping for a 6th. I'm honored, and it is my pleasure to be supported by the community to serve in this role. I enjoy it. This has been, in my opinion, the best council I've been on. And we don't agree on everything, but we respect each other and make decisions in a democratic manner and respect each other after. We were asked, what are our 3 goals? And I've never gone into an election where I've been relatively successful with any of my goals in mind. I don't think that I should determine what should happen, except my one goal is to make this a better community for my kids and now my 2 grandkids who are being raised here. 2 wonderful grandkids. What I believe is our community corporate strategy that has been worked on for the last year that was released in August is what we at the council table should work to implement. It was developed with community groups, with the council, with staff, and it was, is that my time or is that? It was developed as a whole. And when I make decisions at that table, we have had last strategic plan plasticized, and it's at our table. It tells me what the short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals are that staff, the community, council, and community groups want us to work on. Yellow means 30 seconds. Right? Alan, you would love to have this with me. Anyway, my goal at that table is to execute this community plan in a fiscally responsible, positive, and professional manner. and I ask for your support for positive experience at that table that gives me a fixed term. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now have David Vanella come up.
Hello, I'm David Ganella. I'm running for council. For those on the radio right now, hello. And I'd like to describe myself as strikingly handsome. And obviously, it might be different here in person, but I try my best. Why am I a council? Why am I running for council? That's a good question. I think for me, it became a calling. The last 2 years, for many of us, have been very trying. We've all battled with our own, just trying to find our place. How do we want to react? How do we find our the understanding of what's happening? I think it's been a trial for everyone in the community, from the elderly to kids at school. But what I think I want to bring is a fresh approach. Since coming here in 2007, with my wife, Ellen, and to raise a family. It was very important to be a part of this community. It's very important to me to make sure that everyone in our community, first as a Martha Causey Massive Recent Belief Festival, which I am the executive director of, is that all the people there are taken care of. I think that's been my approach since day one since I've been here. It's part of my personality. I tend to be someone who is quite level-headed. I approach things first as someone who listens, because I do not believe I have all the answers. I think, as Kevin Flynn noted, it's very difficult to have goals that you can just pitch to someone. Here I am on a stage for the next 4 years. I think that's a fool's errand at best. What I think I can tell you is I'll do my best. I'll make sure that you're listened to and that I have experience. I have experience with multi-million-dollar budgets. I have experience coming from a position of high debt. The first year I arrived back at the Ruth and Blues after a 2 years hiatus, we were $175,000 in the hole. And over the years, we put ourselves back on our feet to become one of the largest live shows in the interior, which I'm very proud of. And getting there, I've had to find money from private sources, from obviously selling tickets, which are important, but also looking for money through federal funds, provincial funds. And that's the approach I'll take now as your future council member in San Manon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now have Deb Hockbell.
Few years, I've watched how various directors have affected the lives and livelihoods.
Debbie, put it next to your mouth.
Okay.
Good.
How they've affected the lives and livelihoods of many of us. I've realized that the national and local directives have not been actually for the health and welfare of human beings. People died, and they died alone because of isolation. And kids got depressed when they couldn't go to school and play with their friends. And my granddaughter was born in March 2020 with a fright when she saw a face, because faces all of a sudden were not normal. Our community and country also lost many small businesses who were trying to enforce directives that were detrimental to the business. My heart goes out to all the municipal, provincial, and federal employees who found themselves with the choice to follow a mandate or forfeit their careers. With all the information now available, the fact that these mandates have not been reversed in British Columbia or this city is a reason to change the council. All of this seriously affected me to a point that I'm standing here today trying to be part of a council that will work intentionally to bring a sense of healthy community back to San Manon. A council that listens to the people so the city's decisions cannot cause us harm. City Hall is a place to serve the people. That role is an honor I will not take lightly. I am not a politician, I'm a thinker, a listener, a questioner, and a doer. I've been willing to research and to look for a better way. I'm a grandparent determined to heal this world to my grandchildren. Salmon Arm is full of people with amazing skills and abilities, and they're also agencies doing fantastic things. City Council, working with the community, can address all of our concerns. Together, we can protect the children, and they need protecting. We will support our local farmers and businesses. We will take responsibility for our own health, and together we'll assist addicts into recovery and help the homeless into homes. Why have they closed the shelters? I'm committed with your help to develop a solution for the affordable housing. This is necessary for young families and retirees to find homes in this area. Affordable housing is so crucial to help businesses attract workers at all levels, and they're needed in our community. I deeply care for my friends, family, and community. And this is why I'm here. Vote for me, and I'll work with each of you, each and every one of you. I want to hear your ideas, and I want to implement solutions for the needs of this city. Okay. Thank you. And can I please remind everyone to silence their phones so we do not get interrupted? Thank you. And we're now going to have Robert Johnson.
I don't really want to follow that. So I am basically running because I was asked to. Weird, but there's some people seem to think that I'm some kind of a voice for some people that are unwilling or unable to do what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years. But, you know, I've paid a pretty high price for that, and kind of feel like I don't have anything to lose at this point, and I'm kind of just doing this for my kids, because my opinion is that pretty much everything that's gone on for the past 2.5 years at every level of government has been illegal, unethical, and immoral. And as a healthcare worker, oh, it's Dr. Robert Johnson, by the way. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not. I don't really care about the title, and I know you should either. And I hope some of you figure that out in the last few years. But, I forgot something very important. I'm going to steal a page from Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, and I'm going to be brutal, because these are brutal times. So, I just think that ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, to me, the fundamental issue in this election is, do you want to live in a free country or not? The tyranny and authoritarianism that's been on for the past 2.5 years is pretty insane to me. I'm not willing to live in post-truth world or clown world, I call it. So that makes some sense. My whole thing is I just believe in integrity, right? Like, you have to act in accordance with your beliefs. And so, I know I don't want to criticize anybody. I don't know what's going on behind closed doors, council here, but, to me, most of the stuff that's going on has been unacceptable. So, I'm just here to try to represent a dissenting voice, I guess. And, I honestly don't know. I joke that I feel like I'm one of the most loved and most hated people. I'm kind of a polarizing figure, I guess, and I don't know where the split is. I don't know where the society is at. So, anyways, like I said, that's who I am. That's what I'm about. That's why I'm here. So, appreciate you guys' time, and we'll talk to you later on. Thanks.
Thank you. We will now have Sylvia Lindgren. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. I just want to say thank you to the organizers and to the people that have attended tonight. It's a really important part of our democratic process, and I appreciate your participation. I think probably most of the people in the room here already know who I am. My name is Sylvia Lindgren. I am a youth and family worker with the school district and a first-term counselor seeking re-election. I grew up in a middle-class, working-class family. I've lived in Salmon Arm for 28 years. I'm a wife, mother, grandmother, employee. I've been an employer. I had my own business. I've worked mostly in healthcare and education.
I used to be a union president for 5 years, and I ran in 2 provincial elections. So contrary to what you might be hearing tonight, this is not a single issue election. I was elected to council in 2018, and we've done so much. Over the last 4 years, we have been successful in bringing the first electric vehicle to the fleet for the city of Salmon Arm, including charging in the Stargate. We have approved ungendered single-stall washrooms, in case that helps Mr. Fletcher feel better about his daughter. The city has become a living wage employer. We've done an energy audit. We've hired an asset manager who will help us focus on climate action. We've made recommendations on tree bylaws and pesticide bylaws. We've approved 800 units of housing. We've kept the tax increase low while increasing the budget for roads and sidewalks, because you said that was important. We've almost finished the Ross Street underpass, and we had one of the first plastic bag bans in the province. So these were all done under the restrictions of the pandemic. It was no easy task. But we did it. But one of the most important things that I think that we did was that we built new and forged more relationships with the province, with our community partners, and with the First Nations bands around our community. Those are the relationships that are going to help us move towards our goals together. In the next 4 years, I'd like to start working more on a climate action plan. I'd like to see bike lanes come to fruition and the West Bay Trail get started. I want to increase density by building up, not out, so we can preserve trees and keep our green spaces. But to accomplish all of that, we need to be working together. And in order to work together, I think we need to come together. I don't know if you're aware, but Shane Poizan was in town today speaking at the high school. He's a spoken word poet, made famous doing his speech at the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver. I am Canadian. And he spoke, he did a piece about 9 months ago that he wants to sort of reflect on where we were in the pandemic and his feelings of isolation and his hope for the future. And he called it Tomorrow. And it was about what can we look forward to tomorrow. And listening to that, I realized that our country, our planet, has gone through the worst global... Thank you very much, Sylvia. Next up, we have Louise Wallace Richmond. Good evening. Thank you so much for being here. Tonight is about our shared priorities as a city and less about our personal ones. I'm going to use my few minutes to tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Louise Wallace Richmond. I live in Timmins. I teach part-time at Oak Mountain College. I've served on many nonprofit boards in this community, and I've owned a small marketing and design business since 1999 when I moved here. The first time I was elected, I remember my opening remarks from that electoral forum. I shared with you that Salmon Arm had taught me many things. It taught me how to build community. It taught me how to raise a family. It taught me how to run a business. It taught me how to collaborate, to contribute, and get things done. And I talked about how grateful I was for those lessons. And I'm still grateful every single day. Tonight, I'd like to share with you what being on Salmon Arm Council has taught me. It's taught me the value of discussion and debate. It's important because it makes for better, more thoughtful, more meaningful decisions. It taught me the importance of listening, not just positioning, because if we go into debate thinking that we know everything, we're only robbing ourselves, our community, and each other of a better way forward. It taught me humility. Local government is an amazingly complex system because it has enormous impact on our daily lives. Salmon Arm has an annual budget of just over $40 million. $7 million of that we, our city, has to collect on behalf of other levels of government. That's a big responsibility. As a community, we share almost $250 million in assets and infrastructure. We have over 100 employees, we serve 8,500 households, and we have 20,000 residents. Every single day, the city serves these people. I also learned that being on council is a job that I love.
And I'll admit it, I'm a nerd. I love charts. I love graphs. I love spreadsheets. I love reports. I love strategies. I love planning. My dad was a planner. I was high school president. I'm a meeting junkie. It might not make me fun at parties, but it makes me a pretty good city councilor. I'm curious. I'm invested. I'm determined to make good, informed, and helpful decisions every single day. And probably the most important lesson I've learned is that nothing, and I mean nothing, that is important is easy or is Thank you. We now have Christine Wickner. Wife, my name is Christine Wickner. I want to start by acknowledging that we're on the stolen lands of the Sequoia people, and that truth is something that I don't take lightly in any political activity I'm part of. I look forward to answering questions about policy tonight. I have a decade of experience in both electoral and movement politics. Combined with education and policy design from the Harvard Kennedy School, I feel this is one of my strengths. I won't claim to have all the answers, though, nor is that a reasonable expectation of any of us in this age of information. I'm going to talk about the principles of effective policy development rather than specifics, in an effort to move away from promissory and performative politics, which I believe erodes trust between citizens and politicians. Governing is so much more than policy design. There are steps that cannot be skipped on the road to legislation. Steps like facilitating democracy, communicating effectively, and educating. We've seen in the pandemic how rushing through these steps, even if necessary by context, can be dangerous to the cohesion and safety of our society. Moving forward, we must take responsibility for that and commit to making our system safer and more accessible for those that feel shut out of decision-making. I respect and believe everyone on the stage is well-intentioned, but I see two views on government that are competing on the stage and in our society. One is that the government is all bad, corrupt, and tyrannical. And another is that everything's good and working well and nothing to see here. Both of these are problematic to me because one will breed instability and the other will breed complacency. My children's future can't afford any of those right now. We need to avoid extremes rooted in emotion and privilege and focus on evidence-based decision-making in order to address the intersecting crisis facing our community and beyond. I consider myself and others on the stage to be that reasonable option. I know that the system is not perfect and can identify the imperfections while also appreciating the good. A couple of years ago, I watched a house across the street from me be torn down in 4 days. They methodically worked to preserve the best parts of it that were still functioning while disposing of what had become unusual and irrelevant. They used a variety of tools to ensure it didn't collapse into a pile of rubble. This is the example we need. With the right tools, a plan, and hard work, anything is possible. We don't have to buy the lie that change is slow, messy, and complicated. We just need the right team in place. I'm asking you to listen tonight for the people that acknowledge that there's a lot of work to be done and demonstrate an understanding of the tools available to us to get it done. And watch in the coming days for people that work hard to earn your vote. I want to be at the table with those people working hard long after October 15th to engage citizens, make good land use decisions, and ensure our community prospers together. Cook's Jam for engaging tonight. Kim Lavery, candidate for re-election to council, will not be attending this evening due to health matter. He will be issuing a press release on this following, and he will follow up with answers to the questions on a social media forum. So it is now time for our question and answer period. Each candidate will be provided 1 minute to answer the question given. We will officially be keeping track of time and will indicate time remaining by raising a yellow card at the 30-second mark and a red card at the 50-second mark, and we'll cut you off at the 1 minute mark. We ask that all candidates assist us by being respectful of their time allotment. The questions this evening were submitted by the community members via email to the Chamber Administration. We received over 60 questions, and a special thank you to all of those that took the time to respond. From these questions, we condensed them into key categories and revised them into our final form for tonight's event.
due to the overwhelming submissions and array of topics, and in the interest of allowing each candidate enough time to respond to the questions, we have elected to ask a total of 15 questions. Each question will be answered by two candidates, and each candidate will answer a total of three questions. The question order has been randomly drawn in advance of tonight's forum. To ensure transparency and equity, the names will be drawn tonight by myself before each question. I will ask the question to the two candidates, and then we will move on to the next question and the remaining candidates until such time as we complete all of the questions and answer portion of the program. Equally essential, we recognize the importance of hearing all candidates' responses to the questions. So tomorrow, the chamber will distribute a full list of the questions asked this evening to all of the candidates, providing them with the opportunity to respond individually to the media sources. So we will draw the first two candidates to answer the first question out of my lovely popcorn bag. So the first to answer is Deb Hockadoll and David Gonella. So the first question this evening is, what is your opinion about the management of the COVID-19 pandemic in BC and in this community?
Really terrible. It's managed very terribly. Within 1 month, we were very aware that it was, people could die, but it was much like flu. People die all the time with the flu, and we don't hear those numbers. Within 1 month, that was known. They had a cruise ship, that was a perfect petri dish. We found out how it would work out, and we destroyed life for 2.5 years. David?
I believe in science-based responses to the pandemic. I believe the province made decisions that were definitely harder and knew that politically it was going to be very unpopular. I think in the future, we're going to have to find a way of approaching future pandemics in a process that's not as detrimental to all levels of society. But looking back, I think it's easy, as I'm sitting here as an armchair quarterback, to say that those decisions could have been better. Yeah, I think they could have been. But we went through it to save lives. We did it to save people. And I can't really see how in the future that would be different, as long as it's science-based.
Thank you for your responses. So the next question will be answered by Kevin Flynn and Christine Wickner. What do you intend on doing to resolve the issue of the tents that are being erected throughout the school district property? And we'll start with Kevin.
So, hello? The homelessness issue is significant in Salmon Arms, not as significant as it is in other communities. The city of Salmon Arm has been discouraging tents, camping. It's not allowed on our parkland, on our land, but we do not control school district property. Clearly, we are all concerned about the tents, about the homeless. We have added 500-plus homes to our community. We've added 130 subsidized and fully supported homes, 40 of them, no cost, to the homeless. I think we've done what we can, and we are working with other levels of government to improve the situation.
Thank you, Christine. It's difficult when I'm not at the table to know what's been discussed between the multiple levels. Obviously, BC Housing has a huge role to play in this, and they need to step up. But I also hear from my colleagues on the provincial level that sometimes cities don't step up in terms of providing what they need, like, for example, land, if they wanted to put temporary housing up that would be at least contained in a safe spot where police and emergency services could be know where they are and help with harm reduction and poverty outreach. It's shocking to me that the federal government has not declared a state of emergency when it comes to the poison drug supply and hasn't provided military enforcement. We're fighting resource wars abroad, but we're not fighting our emergencies here at home, which is problematic. Thank you for your responses. The next question will be answered by Brian Fletcher. And Robert Johnson. There are other communities on the island that are entering into a collaboration of city, private, and BC Housing that are contributing to a project to build small homes for the vulnerable population. Are you aware of this project, and are you willing to explore this more for our community? And we will start with Brian.
I am not aware of the project, but I think that the homeless population, mental health, substance abuse are always two key factors that is prevalent in those populations. Another one is having the ability, if the homeless population is willing to seek help, that there are resources available to them quickly. How exactly that would work, I'm not sure. I've never dealt with the homeless issue in any sort of capacity, so I think I would rely on frontline workers, such as like RCMP, social workers, people working at the Lighthouse, and also the homeless population themselves, and see what they would see as the most valuable to them.
Thank you. Robert Johnson.
Oh, yeah, I'm not aware of that project either, and I'm by no means any sort of expert on homelessness, and I'm also a libertarian, and I don't believe in the government solving any problems ever, but obviously, I mean, nobody wants to see anybody on the street or anybody addicted or anybody having mental health issues, so, you know, it's interesting. I have no idea whether the demographics of homelessness have changed in the last 2.5 years with all of these people losing their livelihoods and our social fabric being torn apart. But either way, yeah, I'm totally, you know, until we can transition and raise the consciousness of humanity to a better solution, I'm definitely all about the local and provincial governments working together to provide housing for people that don't otherwise have access.
Thank you very much. The next question will be Louise Wallace Richmond and Daniel Vardy. This past year, we saw an increase of 4% in property taxes to pay for increased policing costs. Jurisdictions such as Nelson have a city police force. Do you agree the Salmon Arms should consider a city police force and phase out the RCMP? And we will start with Louise.
Thank you. There is a massive shortage of labor in all policing forces. We have a detachment of 19 that we work hard to keep. Now is not the time, I'm afraid, to decide to abandon that and start something brand new. The RCMP is part of a national network. We share intelligence, we share training, we share resources. I don't understand this push towards independent policing. We are only a city of 20,000, and that 4% increase was as a result of negotiations that were done at the federal level, and we paid
90% of the bill, whether we like it or not. And that's the way I'm afraid it is for now.
Thank you. And Daniel.
RCMP is the Rock on the Canadian Mountain College, right? And I don't agree with any increase in the property taxes because that pushed the family even deeper on their pocket. By statistics, over 65% of all Canadians live from paycheck to paycheck. A lot of people have 3 to 5 credit cards, which when they basically pay off the credit. So I am not for increasing in taxes. We should do the big audit for the city financing. If we need, maybe we should increase the bylaw services. But the most important to me, bring for the population responsibility, because freedom goes shoulder to shoulder with responsibility. Get educated kids, people, to be responsible for neighborhoods and never touch the private pocket. That's the easy way to do it, because everything is done by hard work and people, right?
Thank you very much.
The next question goes to Sylvia Lindgren and Debbie Cannon. Have you read through the official community plan? Sylvia first. Okay. So, yes, of course, we all read through the official community plan. I'm not sure what the question is actually getting at here. The official community plan is developed over a period of time with staff, senior staff, and council working collaboratively together, sometimes with a consultant and sometimes on our own. And it is the plan that guides our development, our everything that we do. And so, yes. Of course we have.
And Debbie.
Thank you. Yes, I have read through the community plan. It is due to be re-looked at, and it is a living document. That's how it was always described when we did our last review on it. It kind of outlines the city, the different areas, and the zoning, and that's what the official community plan is all about. And the last time we did the review, the community was very involved with it. There was roundtable discussions when we put it together with consultants, and it is due for a review and a new OCP to look at it.
Thank you very much. So I place the names back into the bucket, and we will start on our next round of questions. So we'll start with Louise Wallace Richmond and Daniel Barty. Climate change has altered the way municipalities view severe weather, with infrastructure, property, and lives being at much greater risk. Communities across Canada now experience 1 in 1,000-year extreme weather events, more commonly resulting in huge losses. If elected, what actions will you take to address climate change and make your community more resilient to climate change? And we will start with Louise.
Thank you. We have to stop talking about the risk of climate change. It's not a risk anymore. It's a reality. We need, all of us need, to reduce our GHG emissions. At the city level, that means measuring every single department every single year to reduce the GHG emissions. It's a provincial program used to be called CARIP. And as a result of that work, and those measurements and that data, the city is granted provincial funding, and all of those dollars go back into climate initiatives. We need to focus less on the cost of doing things and more on the cost of not getting it done. Just ask our friends in Abbotsford, Merritt, and Princeton.
And Daniel?
I believe climate change is a natural process of this planet. What is the impact of the human? We don't know exactly. It's still very questionable. What I believe, we have to protect our environmental for all spectrum, but with common sense, because we can see the government worldwide spend billions of dollars for solar panels, for the another sources of electricity. But when you see in California, California, there are thousands of acres of solar panels which one they cannot reuse, and that is waste. And we don't know what is the impact using the electric batteries, and et cetera, et cetera. We have to protect our environmental, but still keep common sense. For me, the very important level of climate is the pollution caused by people and also using of natural resources. That is the two biggest concerns about the climate.
Thank you. The next question will be answered by Christine Wickner and Debbie Cannon. Food availability was severely affected during extreme weather events that tore apart highways and drowned lower mainland farmland and farm animals. How would you work to enhance food security in this region? And we'll start with Christine.
Yes, food security is huge. I recently became a parent at Hillcrest Elementary, and we have not stopped talking amongst ourselves in the breakfast program about how the need is higher and funding is shorter. There's great agencies in the area, Food Action Society, that's doing great work. I think we could do more. There's a lot of people sitting on ALR land that aren't using it, and I think we could, I don't know the word for it, but get people that want to farm on that land that isn't being used. And that would be one way to make sure that we're growing food locally, helping people out that want to use their knowledge about farming. There's a lot of people new to Canada that have that type of skill set, and partnering those folks with people not using their land would be a great way to do that.
Thank you. Debbie Cannon.
Thank you. A great question. I think that something that was evident when we had the flooding and the highways were shut down is that there was a lot of things that we couldn't get in and we obviously couldn't get out. And one that I think about is our dairy farms. So many of the dairy farms in our area and within the city limits of Salmon Arm, dairy farms that operate, were dumping gallons and thousands of gallons of milk. And that just seems criminal when you went to the grocery stores and there was no milk. So I think we need to look at the future to possibly process stuff like milk and dairy products within the interior. Seems ridiculous. We ship it to Vancouver and then we bring it back to the carton.
Thank you very much. The next question will be answered by Sylvia Lindgren and Deb Hockadal. A member of the public approaches you with a valid concern. What steps would you take to address this concern? And Sylvia.
So somebody once told me when I sat down with them that you need to have a pencil and a piece of paper in front of you when you sit down to listen to their concerns, and so that's where I'd start. I'd go for coffee probably with that person, we'd have a conversation, and then I would take that concern back to often the mayor and the CAO of the city to have a discussion about where the city is on that now. What have we done up to this point? What can we do? Do we have plans to address that in the future? Once I've gathered the information that I can, I would report back to the person that I've done some research and that these are the answers that I found, and ask them if there was more that they would like me to do. Yeah. So hopefully there are steps that are being taken by the city already, and I can report back to them on that.
Thank you. And Deb? Yeah.
Hello. How to answer a question, we take it, show a lot of interest in the person because you do care about their situation and see what you can do about it, for sure.
Thank you very much. The next question will be answered by Robert Johnson and David Vanella. CSRD is responsible for administering the emergency program, but the city, through its two city members on the CSRD board, can give input to the administration of emergency programs on behalf of the city. Do you see a role that businesses should play in preventing emergencies and in helping when disaster occurs? Let's start with Robert.
depends on the disaster and the business. Like, I don't know, because obviously, again, my bank is always to have businesses and hopefully then the private sector solving problems and dealing with situations. Yeah, I mean, obviously, again, it depends on what are we talking about, a flood, a fire, a pandemic. I think collaboration between the public and private sector should always be promoted whenever it's possible.
Thank you. And David?
Absolutely, the city should be involved. CSRD is a point on all preparedness for emergencies. The city has an active part in this to make sure their planning is correct, and it actually takes into account what resources we have available. At those moments, we need all hands on deck. No one's an individual in a moment of emergency. We all have to come together as a community and make sure that we can stay safe together no matter what we're facing. And, yeah, that's all I have to say on it.
Thank you very much. And we'll be answered by Brian Fletcher and Kevin Flynn. Okanagan Avenue and 20th Street Northeast is a ticking time bomb and is very dangerous crossing at peak hours and school hours. How would you address this? We'll start with Brian.
Well, I mean, if we can agree that it's a ticking time bomb, we're sitting here with incumbent counselors. It's been sitting that way for years. I live just up the street from 20th on 23rd. There's a new subdivision, a new crosswalk. It hasn't been changed. People come flying up Okanagan at 100 kilometers an hour. I see it there. There's speed bumps at the bottom of Okanagan. Like, they can be put up Okanagan. You can put a roundabout. You can put a traffic light there. There should be something done, definitely on Okanagan. And to see it sitting there for years and having this question come up, I guess, shows a few things.
And Kevin.
Thank you, and I am not a traffic engineer. I am not a traffic specialist. I do drive that street every day, two or three or four or five times, and that intersection is a difficult one, no question. The fact is, it can't have a roundabout due to topography and lack of land that has been looked at by the city. Four-way stop, I'm not sure that's the solution. It's pretty hard to stop coming down 20th. The reality is we have significant topography issues, and we have some areas that have significant traffic, and we have a problem with people speeding. We've asked for more enforcement. We've looked at a traffic circle. I think there are solutions. They are being looked at, and that is just one of our difficult intersections that we are looking at long-term solutions.
Thank you very much. So the names have been put back into the bag, and we will draw for the next question. So it'll be Louise Wallace Richmond and Brian Fletcher. Some months ago, there were a number of demonstrators that regularly set up their demonstration in Blackburn Park. Community residents who tried to enjoy the park felt intimidated by these demonstrators and made complaints to City Hall. There is a bylaw to deal with this type of infraction, but there was nothing done to resolve this issue. What is your position on keeping our parks and community areas free of these types of demonstrations? And we'll start with Louise.
We have to remember that a public park is sacred space, and it's for the public. Any sort of gathering that is private, commercial, or political, it's customary to rent a hall or do it in private property. Our parks were built by all of us. They were supported by all our nonprofit groups. It is customary to ask for a permit. Permits were not asked for. I mean, how much of your time and money do you want to spend sending out bylaw officers on the weekend to deal with people who don't even have the decency to ask for permission? I know what I want to spend on that.
Thank you. Brian Fletcher.